So one of my favorite topics pursuing, can hardly wait to talk to you about this, George. Hey, you're listening to Foreplay Radio for couples and sex therapy with your host, myself, Lori Watson, sex therapist, and George Fowler, expert couples therapist. George and I are counselors, educators, authors, researchers, contributors, and leaders in our field with a collective 50 years of experience working with couples and sex therapy. We're grounded in the best and most scientific research from attachment theory with our emphasis on emotionally focused therapy. Using all we've learned from our clients, our work, and our own lives, we want to have this open, frank, and informative conversation about love and sex to help you and your partner keep it hot. So we're going to talk about my side of the fence today, which is fun.
All right.
Being a pursuer. I think one of the things I feel definitely as a pursuer is I've got hope. Sometimes I know that it's not working, but I keep going because I just keep thinking, gosh, you know, if I keep going with this person, a patient even sometimes when I'm blowing it, or a friend, or my husband, or my kids. I've got three boys. Two of them are withdrawers. One of them is a pursuer, thank God. He understands me. But, you know, I can keep going,
yeah.
Right? But the hope is that they'll finally hear it. I'll say it every which way.
Right.
You know? I remember when my kids were in school, and they'd come to me, and they'd say, you know, I got a D. And I just had this routine, right, to go through, like, I'd study, yeah. They'd say, what would you have happened if you'd studied an hour a day more?
Sure.
You know, no, I'd have still gotten maybe just a C. What would have happened if you'd studied just 2 hours? You know, I'd just drive it home, this pursuing part that just would go for it and go for it and go for it until I got this reluctant, you're right.
You know, I love as you're talking to me now, your hands are kind of whacking into each other. It just shows that energy, right? That
yeah.
image I come up with, if you take a pursuer and you put the pursuer on a desert island and you put a withdrawer on a separate desert island, it's the same desert islands.
I'm going to get eaten by the shark.
Right?
I'm going to swim over.
You're going to try to swim. Well, this is, you don't even know where your other partner is. But again, how does a pursuer experience that island? It's distress. It's yelling. It's screaming. SOS.
It's hell.
It's hell, throwing rocks, building fires. I mean, that energy is mobilizing.
Yeah.
Right? You withdraw, you put them on a desert island, and they're like, ah, I don't want to live here. But it's just, it's relaxing. It's calm. It's a very different reality.
They're going to watch the waves for a little
bit. Watch the waves, counts the stars.
Meditate.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to zoom out for a second because
okay.
I don't want to oversimplify it. I've never met a pursuer who at times doesn't withdraw. I've never met a withdrawer who doesn't sometimes pursue. Some of us are in more of one category than the other, but it's really
true.
Important to get both of these worlds equally well.
Right. My husband says, yeah, you're a pursuer and you always complain about having to initiate and all this stuff until you get a pursuing girlfriend. And then you're totally a withdrawer.
That's a great... He's a wise man, your husband.
I know. I have this one girlfriend who, whenever we go for walks, and we do it fairly frequently, she gets out her calendar at the end of the walk and says, okay, when are we going to walk again? And I just feel this suffocation.
Pressure.
I love her. I
right.
love talking to her. But I feel this suffocation, like, don't nail me down. I'm so busy. I mean, I do have that sense of withdrawing
yeah.
inside, too.
Yeah, I think growing up in my family, you know, I had 7 siblings and my parents, some of them,
Irish
my
Catholic.
Dad, my mom I withdrew from, my dad I pursued, some brothers I pursued. So again, it depends on a relationship. Our moves might change, right? But just to be able to get the gist of what it's like for both, what it feels like to be suffocated and wanting to get away from the relationship. But today we're really trying to understand what is it like when you want more and you can't get it.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk about the world of a pursuer. As a reformed withdrawer, I've spent thousands and thousands of hours walking in the shoes of pursuers. So I feel like I finally get it.
You do talk about us pretty well, I think.
Well, thank you. So I think the main thing starting off too is appreciating the value of this pushing energy.
Yeah.
Pursuers tend to be the ones who want to initiate, repair, talk. They have more words. They can express their feelings. You know, this is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as a therapist, I give a homework assignment, read George's Sacred Stress, Chapter 1,
mm-hmm.
they read the whole book.
Of course they
right?
do.
They highlight key sections.
And they're the ones asking for homework,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Tell me what to do.
They work so hard.
They do.
And that's a great, great benefit to the relationship. So we want to start off with connecting with what's it like to work so hard and then get so little of the fruits for that work.
Right. It's crazy.
That's often a word pursuers will use. They feel crazy. Like they're doing all this work to be appreciated. They want their partner to say, hey, I'm pretty lucky to have you. And yet what they keep seeing is their partner walking away from them. Mm-hmm. It's hard to make sense of kind of what you're trying to get, and you're getting precisely the opposite.
It is so backwards.
That's a great word, backwards.
Because the harder they go for it, the further away their partner goes. I think about it like South Pole magnets on a rod. One partner comes forward and it just bounces the other partner back. And it's hard to understand. They're full of love. They're full of wanting to be close. They want to have study breaks together. What the heck is happening?
Well, again, I think what they don't recognize, I want to meet them in this place where it feels unfair that they're trying so hard and they're so creative, but they often don't see how good they are at pushing. So they might ask, they might offer reassurance to their partner. They might offer advice. They might try to correct their partner. They might diagnose their partner. They might. There's so many different ways that they try to get their partner to change because it's their pushing that they believe, like you said, if I can just get my son to listen, if he'll just hear what I'm saying, maybe the results will change the next time.
Right.
You know, so if he's not going to listen to me going through the front door, I'll go through the side door. If he locks that, I'll go through the basement. He don't like that, I'll go up to the, you know, ladder to the second floor.
That's right.
So resilient in how pursuers try to impact change. I mean, that's the word. I loved how you said hope. Right? They often come across as being critical and negative, demanding, pushing. But when you actually take that away, when pursuers stop pushing, they get depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Because the push is their hope that things are going to change.
Yeah.
It's their belief
it's the
somebody's
way
finally going
out.
To listen. Exactly.
Right.
So that's the reframe we want to get withdrawers listening, that they're not waking up choosing to be critical. Their criticism is just hope that things are going to change.
And that's what they say, right? If I don't push, nothing's going to change.
Right.
If I stop telling my partner about how we could be closer, painting this picture that we could be better, then they're just going to go away.
No, it's so important. They're saying, just like a withdrawer is saying, I'm withdrawing in a hope you're going to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
That never really works. Even though it works for them in their own individual world, when you understand the pursuer, they're never going to calm down when you walk away from them.
Mm-mm.
Pursuers are doing the same thing. I'm talking and I'm pushing you in a hope you're going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Telling a withdrawer they're failing doesn't motivate them to listen. It motivates them to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And we laugh about this thing, but when you're caught up in it, it's really hard to see.
And it's so hard, I think, as a pursuer to see like how you're pushing.
Yes.
I have a girlfriend who I love to death, and she's kind of always interpreting her husband. Well, you know, he really means this, or don't you mean this, honey, or something. And it's very subtle.
Exactly.
Very subtle. And the guy barely talks because she's doing all the talking. And it's really hard to know whether or not he means that or not. You never know because she's talking for him. But I can see it just on the outside that it shuts him down further and further and further, because this interpretation and this encouragement to say it better is actually a push.
Nice. I mean, that's subtle is almost harder to see. It reminds me of the opposite of subtle. One of the first couples I saw after 9/11, the wife came into my session and she said, George, I'm so happy to see you. I mean, it's just, I've been waiting 2 weeks for this session. I don't know what to do. I can't get this man to talk. I've tried everything. I read Sue Johnson's book and nothing's working for this man. He comes from a German family. Nobody talks in his family. I come from an Italian family. We always talk. And you know, she went on like this at this pace for 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. And her complaint is he doesn't talk.
Right.
I'm sitting back saying, how could this poor guy talk? You never shut up.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, at that end, she didn't even take a breath.
Edgewise.
She must have been an Olympic athlete. But I mean, again, it really drove home to me the importance of that energy, because what would happen? Here's the key. What would happen if she didn't push and she didn't talk?
Yeah. She'd give up. She'd feel helpless.
Silence.
Mm.
Yeah. Silence.
Oh, you mean and for the withdrawal, right?
Right. No, for the pursuer, if they didn't do it. Like, just like a withdrawer we're trying to get, what would happen if they didn't go away? That's why they go away. To stay in it is so scary. The opposite for the pursuer. What would happen if they didn't push? That's the real fear. It's
fear
the silence.
Nothing will change, right?
Nothing will change.
Nothing
That's
will change.
That's the place of vulnerability. Yeah. What would happen if nothing changed, if you had to sit in your silence, if you were all alone, right? That's the desperate place that drives all this pushing.
Yeah.
And who sees that in a pursuer?
Not their withdrawing partner.
That's a problem.
Their withdrawing partner feels relief,
right?
You know, when the pursuer stops pushing.
Yes. Yeah. And what they don't recognize is once they walk away, all of that energy that the pursuer has that's being directed towards them in a critical, negative way now turns inward on the pursuer. Mm-hmm. Right? This is where pursuers
start. I need too much.
Right.
I am too much. Which
What's
is, I
wrong
think,
with me?
I think that's the message of childhood that you come away from as a pursuer, right? You were too much. You annoyed your parents. I mean, they're afraid of that replication. Somebody's going to turn around and tell me I'm too much. It's almost unbearable to be told you're too much.
I mean, to me, that's the definition of hell. They're cut off from human relationships and they turn and don't like themselves. And the tapes start playing, what's wrong with me? And just like my father said, I'm too much. I have bad timing. I can't. I mean, and it's a horror show and nobody even sees it.
That's right. That's right.
Not okay.
Not okay. Let's come back and see it.
All right.
Hey, I want to thank you for your support and enthusiasm for George. We're having fun as we get to know each other and figure out our balance and working relationship. And we have an opportunity for you if you have sexual difficulties or if you're a therapist and you want to refer a patient. We have a 3-hour intensive available with both of us if you are near New York City on December 2nd or if you can get there. If you would like two of the finest minds in couples and sex therapy focused on your partnership, email me and I'll give you the details on costs and requirements. Again, a 3-hour intensive is available with both George and I doing co-therapy with you. Hey, I want to let you guys know all about George. He's written and contributed to several books, and I'd especially like to draw your attention to his book, Sacred Stress, A Radically Different Approach to Using Life's Challenges for Positive Change. His book is about a mission on how you adopt new strategies and turn stresses into a positive force in your life. And who among us doesn't live with a lot of stress these days? We'll keep you posted as to all he's doing. But George and other EFT therapists all around the country and the world hold couples retreats called Hold Me Tight, which is developed by Sue Johnson, and it helps secure your own relationship. If you'd like therapy with George, find him at georgefowler.com. We're back, helping the pursuers.
Right. You can just feel the heaviness of this place where you're working so hard to not be left alone and you keep finding yourself alone.
Right. And you said the silence of, if I don't do this, then nothing's going to happen, nothing's going to change, and I'm going to feel horrible. And I'm going to feel like somehow or another, I just needed too much.
I have an example of, I was working with a pursuer and she had a fight with her husband. It was a horrible fight. And they went to bed not talking to each other, which was pretty horrible. Because the pursuers want to say, hey, let's stay up all night. If we don't sleep, we can at least get a chance. And her husband went to bed. And literally, they're laying next to each other. Her husband is snoring. Right? Mm. And she's just up all night saying, I got to do something different. And so the next day she says, you know what? Today it's going to be a positive day.
Mm-hmm.
So her husband gets up and she's laying in bed and she does some meditation, some centering prayer, and she's trying to ground herself and she smells coffee and she says, oh, look, I'm going to be rewarded. My day's starting off good. My husband made me coffee. Look, we turned it around. And she gets up into the kitchen and the husband had not made her coffee, just made himself some coffee.
Of
she's
course.
Like, ugh. And you know, what we know about the science today that rejection registers in the same part of the brain as physical pain. According to your brain, getting your partner kind of rejecting you or hurting you is like stepping on a nail. So that's like a little punch to the brain when she looks for coffee and hopes for it and doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Right.
And
he
hasn't done anything different other than just getting up
right.
and making coffee.
He don't
right?
know this is going on.
Yeah, he has no idea this whole fantasy is in her head of you know, what would it be like?
So she makes her own coffee. Then she goes into the refrigerator to get milk. Husband finished all the milk. There's no milk. So she's like, all right, I'm just not going to let this stuff rattle me. Right. So then she goes to put a coffee cup in the sink. And there's his cup sitting like 2 feet away from the sink.
Which
like
he didn't put into
right,
the dishwasher.
Now who's got to put it into the dishwasher?
Right, of course.
Right. So you can just feel these constant little things that just keep mounting. She goes into the bathroom. He's just walking out. He says, good morning, dear. And walks past her. Mm-hmm. She goes to jump in the shower. He had used all the hot water. So now she's in a freezing cold shower.
Sure.
So she's like sitting in that shower praying, please don't let the negativity get me.
I'm not going to be critical.
Right?
I'm committed.
She's trying so hard. Today's my day. Right?
Right.
So she gets out. She goes to grab a towel. There it is sitting on the floor, soaking wet. He had just used it.
The last towel.
Now she has to use a towel. And then he comes back in to brush his teeth, and the dam just breaks.
Yeah.
And she's like, how could you do that? And she brings up the towel, the coffee, last week's fight, his mother, the whole laundry list comes out.
You don't care about me.
You don't care about me. And it's like, he looks at her.
Like she's lost her
she's
ever
a lunatic,
living
right?
mind.
And he walks out. And what he has no idea is when he walks out, what is that like for her? She tried every fiber of her being to not be negative, and yet the environment set her up for the same story to play itself out again. And when he leaves now, she's got all of this kind of horrible tapes playing in her own brain.
Yeah. I mean, it's complete abandonment. He didn't even listen to the huge anger that came his way. He's just like, she's hopeless, right?
Yeah. She is too much.
She is too much.
Right? I just got to get away from her. So we get his moves. But this week, we're really trying to understand the good reasons why she's in such distress. That when she needs somebody to come closer to help her make sense of this world, they constantly leave her alone.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we know what happens. You leave a baby alone that's flooded and dysregulated and crying, they're not going to do well.
No.
Right, but somehow we start to blame pursuers because they're anxious.
Right, they're going to disintegrate. I mean, babies disintegrate essentially emotionally if they're left alone. And I think that's what happens to a pursuer. They dysregulate. They get worse. It takes days sometimes to get regulated again.
They do the only adaptive thing they can do is they channel that anxiety and they try to influence the outcome so people don't keep sending them into this place.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get blamed because they're anxious. How could they not be anxious? Mm-hmm. And they start to believe there's something wrong with them because they're anxious,
mm-hmm.
when they were just set up from this from the get-go.
Right.
So again, I'm trying to give that message to pursuers that it's okay to be anxious. That's a normal byproduct of all these misses.
Yeah.
That if we can kind of increase the levels of success with them, then they can be very different people.
Right. It's okay to feel anxious and to feel like you're going a little crazy when your partner walks off after they've used the last towel, the last drop of milk, didn't make you a cup of coffee. I mean, those seem petty, but I think in the world of the pursuer, all of those petty things add up. It's cumulative, exactly. Over time, we just saw one little snippet of a morning. But this has been going on for 12 years.
Yep.
It's all up to them to do the housekeeping, pick up the dry cleaning, plan the menu, pick up the kids, you know, whatever. There's lots of things that they're left in. And this tiny little morning is just an example.
They usually feel alone. We look at the rejections as those moments when their partner walks away. But what we don't often understand with a pursuer is how many hundreds of other rejections. Like every time they hope their partner's going to initiate a conversation and they don't, then eventually the pursuer has to bring it up.
Wait. Say it again, George. Just say that again. I love that.
I'm always thinking about there's the pre-fight, there's the fight, and then there's the post-fight.
Uh-huh.
We keep fighting, focusing on the fight, and that's where the pursuer gets rejected. No, they're rejected throughout the whole process. Before the fight happens, the pursuer's sitting back saying, it would really be nice if this time I withdrawer initiated a conversation.
Why can't they just come home one time and say, let's talk about us. Let's talk about our relationship.
They can learn how to do that.
You know, my favorite example of yours is when you say, when the partner looks at their phone, hoping for a response from their withdrawing partner, every time they look at their phone,
they feel rejected.
Right.
And then finally, when they can take it no more, they have to initiate the repair process to have a conversation.
Exactly.
And most of the time, it's not good timing for the withdrawal. Right? They want to
say,
maybe we could do this another time when, you know, blah, blah, blah. another rejection, which probably leads to a fight. And now who's going to repair that most recent fight?
Right, the pursuer.
That's a lot of responsibility.
It
and
is.
We know on a physiological level, when you have that much responsibility, and your body's going to get stuck on higher levels of anxiety. The baseline for pursuers, they have more anxiety in their nervous system because they constantly have this rejection. And then they're blamed because they have too much anxiety, which
exactly.
is really pretty unfair.
Exactly. I know my husband's favorite thing to say to me is, in a fight, but you're always anxious. It's like, I've stricken that word from my vocabulary. I never tell him anymore I'm anxious.
Well, that's the stuck place for a pursuer is, where would you rather be? Feeling kind of strong, trying to fix your partner, trying to motivate change. Or would you rather go to that more vulnerable place where you're left alone and you feel like less than and insecure, right? It feels so counterintuitive to go to the needy place because then your fears might get confirmed. Why show these parts of myself? I'll just keep being strong and trying to change my partner. But what they don't recognize is every time they try to change their partner goes further away. That place inside of them grows, right? And what pursuers deserve. I mean, the good news, if we know the fear, which is to be rejected, the opposite of that is what? Accepted.
Accepted.
It's to be wanted.
Of course.
Right? So we're trying to get pursuers to go to these softer places, you know, because their pushing is really a plea for help. Mm-hmm. The withdrawer just doesn't hear that.
Okay, but help me, because yes, of course they want to be accepted, but they can't accomplish that on their own. Right, so what do we tell the pursuer? How do we comfort them in this process while they're growing together and learning how to do this differently with their partner when nothing seems to work?
Well, the pursuer needs to come from that view of self place instead of focusing on that partner.
Okay.
I could say to you,
tell me what view
I could
self
say
is.
To you in an angry way, why didn't you come home tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, as a withdrawer, you're going to hear as criticism and probably want to disengage.
Absolutely.
Or I can say to you, you know, when you don't come home, I start to go to a place that maybe you don't want me, that maybe I'm too much for you.
Mm.
Right?
Even as you say that, it like just goes through me. Like it's so vulnerable to talk about need and fear and to talk about your anxiety at such a deeper level.
Right.
But don't you think in some ways people in the beginning, they're not regulated.
Yeah.
The withdrawer is, it's going to be hard to hear that. They're going to still be familiar with the criticalness of their partner. And they'll still say something like, but I'm not enough. No matter what I do, I had to work late, whatever.
Well, the key shift, and you're right, you want your partner to earn the right for your vulnerability. You don't want to be reckless with it and just throw it out there if your partner's going to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But the pursuer needs to do this for themselves, regardless if their partner can respond or not.
Yeah,
they
I
need
love
to
that.
Make room for these parts of themselves that they've been set up to feel this way, and they deserve responsiveness there.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I stand up to you and you can't hear it, there's still a lot of value for me knowing my own deeper truth, that I do have some fear of rejection because that has happened to me too much. I don't want to be alone. And I try to influence my outcome by trying to make sure you don't go away. You know, I often don't get the way I do that often does push you away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're going to help couples to see this. But right now, we really just want to get the world to pursue that they have good reasons for their pushing and their anxiety. And there's a lot of vulnerability underneath that never gets seen or spoken to.
Yeah.
And if they have the courage to go there, that's the first step. Then we're going to help the withdrawer learn how to find their way towards the pursuer.
Mm-hmm.
The good news here is, vulnerability pulls our partner. When you love somebody and you see their vulnerability, it's like a magnet that just pulls you towards them.
Absolutely.
Right?
I think that's kind of how I found my way in it.
Ah.
Just personally, you know,
right.
Was like pretty soon it was the vulnerability. It was stopping the criticism,
yes.
But it was opening up to the vulnerability, saying, I love you, I need you, I want you. Rather than whatever critical words were coming out of you're not there, how come you know,
awesome.
Working late, all that kind of stuff.
The heart of the pushing message is really a plea for help.
Mm-hmm.
If you can help pursuers get more to the bid for I need help, a lot easier it is for the withdrawer to want to get it right and to come forward.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. 4Play Radio, Couples and Sex Therapy. Hi, 4Play fam. The biggest support you can give us is sharing our podcast with a friend. You can